better put him in the Heisman.
Got that wood right here, baby.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Bud Light Seltzer for those anytime easy drinking occasions.
They're going to run and get that boot.
The Arkansas Razorbacks have completed the dream season.
A baseball team that's on the way back. A College World Series title. The Bomb Stadium.
I almost got fired because I went Willie the Boss after I had a little too much sauce.
This is the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast.
One of the quotes from Clay Henry sitting down with Nolan Richardson was Nolan referring to Eric's teams as they play so damn hard. When you hear Nolan saying that about your basketball team, first, Eric Musselman, you have to be beaming when you hear that. One of the best coaches in college basketball history says that about your squad.
Mm-hmm.
Second, as a fan, you think about how enjoyable Nolan's teams here were to watch over the years. And I would say that in different ways and different varieties, Eric's team this past season was really enjoyable to watch. Not as talented, we know that. They didn't get up and down as much as Nolan's team did, but still a really enjoyable team to watch most of the time. Now, there were excruciating points on the road when you wanted to pull your hair out, and there were close losses where you're just banging your head on the seat in front of you. But for the most part, this team was really rather enjoyable to watch throughout the season.
Yeah. Pardon me. Yeah. They, this was a, I think, not just a work in progress, but a team that got more enjoyable. And again, that's why we really look back at the injury to Isaiah Joe and say, man, what could this team have been? And I don't, maybe in the end, not knowing whether or not you would or would have gotten, would or would not have gotten into the tournament is better, because what if they had won three of those five and you felt like certainly you were going this year and then the tournament doesn't happen? Would that lead to more disappointment? Where would you be mentally if you knew, yeah, you were a lot because you finished in the top four of the SEC? What if you'd never gotten to play at the SEC tournament because you put yourself in a position? I mean, that's the kind of team they had this year and were fun to watch because they did play so damn hard. Going back to Nolan's comment, that where would my disappointment level be right now, Ty? Where would yours be if you knew they were going to the tournament?
It would be even higher and even heightened,
exactly.
Unfortunately.
It might be harder to cope with.
Yeah.
Than being a bubble team. Right now, we don't know whether they would or wouldn't have. We'll never find out.
Because CBS decided they weren't going to release a bracket. And Arkansas, if they would have lost to South Carolina.
The NCAA decided that.
Yeah, not CBS, sorry. They would not have made the tournament unless they probably won.
And you kind of live with that. Well, if we don't know, then we didn't make it. Because there wasn't one. Boy, if you'd had a chance to punch your ticket, that'd be really hard to swallow right now.
Taken away. And I put that out after the win against Vanderbilt. I said it would be the most Arkansas thing ever if they made a run in the SEC tournament only to see the NCAA tournament canceled. So yep. I 100% agree with your point when it comes to, but yes, you don't feel great how the season ended because it was taken away from you, but because of where you were in the standings, not on the SEC, but looking at other bubble teams in college basketball, it doesn't hurt as badly at all.
But they were enjoyable. Back to the point with Nolan and where you started the conversation, it was fun to watch what this team did. It was fun to see their transformation. I just wonder, as we've watched this team, how close is this ultimately to really what Eric Musselman wants to be all about offensively?
Turnover-wise, they were top 40. I think they finished 39, 38 or something. At one point, he had one of his Nevada teams 2 years ago as the number one turnover rate team in college basketball. They just did not turn the ball over. So from that perspective, yes, scoring, not so much. We were talking about Jalen Harris transferring out of the program at the beginning of the show. He had shooters all over the place in Nevada. Cody and Caleb Martin, more Caleb than Cody. You had different other guys. I know Caroline was more of a get-to-the-rack guy, but you had guys all over the floor that could shoot. I think the spacing's only going to get better with this incoming class because you've added a couple different shooters. You bring Note off from him having to sit out. Vanover, obviously, you get his three-point shooting. I think offensively, that's probably the lowest bar that's been set for Eric Musselman in his time at Arkansas. Just probably like everything else, that's probably his worst team that he's going to have at Arkansas.
Taking personnel out of it, just the type of offense, what do you think he wants to get it to? And adding, he didn't have anyone to replace that five piece. I mean, they just kind of mixed and matched and did what they could with Reggie Chaney and Adriel Bailey this year. What do you think offensively, with the pace and space and all of these things. We've seen him already talking about, you know, studying NBA teams and trying to figure out what to do with Vanover for pick and rolls and setting high screens and pick and roll. What do you think this offense is? What's his vision here for how it will roll, how it will flow in a half court set?
I think he wants to take and make a decent amount of threes. Top 15, two of his 4 years at Nevada in that category. I mean, he and I say that it was pretty good. It wasn't that high. I was looking at his 3-point defense, but he wants to have a team that has shooters all over the place. The pace and space aspect that you've talked about, where he can get them up the floor and go and have multiple different shooters that can do that. I think he wants just an offense that's more efficient, because at times this season, this offense got stagnant when Joe wasn't on, when Jones wasn't on. This offense was not the same as you saw at other points of the season. I think he just wants more weapons, which he didn't have last year. I know Jimmy had his points. I know Adriel got better 3-point shooting, yeah. But the majority of your weapons, the majority of your arsenal came from two players, Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe. So I think moving forward, he just wants more talent on his team, so he's not so centrally focused on running sets for two specific guys. He wants to be able to have action for a number of different of his players, so there's not much as pressure on two of his guys or one of his guys when Isaiah went out than there was on Mason this past season.
You were mentioning a stat there from Nevada a minute ago, and you inadvertently looked at three-point defense, but let's talk about three-point defense, because wasn't that really, if you looked at what this team was about more than anything this year, at Arkansas, wasn't that like the number one stat you might zero in on, is how well they defended the three? Isn't that what really, and you go back and you reference Nevada, got me to think, that's really what he's about at the end of the day, is defending perimeter, defending, making teams take longer shots and not letting them make, you know, putting a hand in their face. Pace and space with the defense as much as it is anything, getting out and defending the three-point line.
Yeah.
That's what we've seen consistently from him, is what the numbers say.
Two of his Nevada teams finished top 15 in that category. That's the stat I was referencing earlier. They ended up finishing second, not first, in three-point percentage defense. So, really standout category. I know that Musk referred to it several times this season, how crucial that was for their team. That, hey, we get beat in other areas, but this team's not going to hit whichever team, fill in the blank, is not going to hit a bunch of threes on us.
Well, and we know college basketball's turned into one of two things. You take a three or you drive to the hole and you get a dunk. I mean, that's what everybody's looking to do offensively. The Jimmy Witts of the world, the mid-range jumpers, it's not out there. That's why Jimmy Witts such an anomaly. Boy, you take away three-pointers, and then you put a Connor Vanover in the middle to defend, and if he plays with good defensive technique, Arkansas is going to be a hard team to face in the half court, particularly with a shot clock that, by the time you get it set up in the front court, you're in the low 20s a lot of times if you limit their transition game. So now in 20 seconds or so, once you get set up in your half court, you got to figure out how to find an open three, which Arkansas doesn't give up easily. Or now I got to go in there and deal with this, was he 7'4", 7'3"?
7'3".
7'3" guy, I got to go in there and deal with this 7'3" guy. And if he plays good vertical defense, he's going to be a challenge in there inside that restricted area.
JT and Hot Springs text in. If you want to call or text in, it's 877-377-6963. He says to defend the three and shoot the three well gives you an excellent opportunity to win the game. JT, you're exactly right. That's the direction that college basketball has trended to this point, that it's so crucial. The three-point shot is so important for teams today. And Arkansas, while they didn't have a great offensive output in that category, they had a tremendous defensive category. So maybe it'll even out a little bit this next season. And looking ahead, if you want to talk about what next year holds, the shooting aspect, you mentioned Connor Vanover, depending on if Mason and Isaiah comes back, there's three shooters right there. Then you have Desi, who really came on late with his three-point jumper, especially coming off the bench. You have Moses, who can fill it up, has been described by Paul Benicardi, who's ESPN's basketball recruiting analyst, as potentially the best shooter in this recruiting class. KK Robinson, he can knock down shots in two. And Jalen Williams, he's a pick and pop 4 or 5. So he can play down low and he can also knock down the three. So you're going to have, let's see, Moses, Jalen, KK, Connor, Desi, potentially Isaiah, potentially Mason, and then JD as well. So that's what
nine?
Is that nine that I counted out?
I'm looking at your fingers. I lost count. I'm just looking at your fingers.
You'll have 8 or 9 guys that can shoot the rock next year, which You can't necessarily say that about this year's team. Cause
you said Vanover in that nine, right?
Correct. Yeah.
7'3" guy that can shoot it.
Yeah. And I'm curious with next year's roster how Eric Musselman plays, because we know a lot of times he loved the small ball five guards. Well, he's going to have that opportunity again this next year. And with the additions of Baby Ola, who will be cleared to play, you'll have Connor Vanover, obviously, cleared to play. You'll have Jalen Williams, another big guy. And then depending on what happens with Reggie Chaney and then Ethan Henderson, you'll have more big men to use. So maybe there's times where you saw this season when he'd play Reggie and then he'd play Adriel or he'd play Ethan. You'll have opportunity to have bigger guys in there, like a Jalen and Connor mix or an Ethan and Jalen mix. You'll have a big guy that can shoot it and a big guy that can get your boards down low. And I know Adriel, he shot pretty well, I think 38, 39% from three. But I think the more different compatibility patterns that you can use with these players next year only helps your three-point shooting, which will turn into wins.
So knowing his formula, knowing what he likes to do, knowing who's coming in, if Isaiah Joe and Mason Jones come back, figuring out, we've talked about, you know, he's got nine guys he likes to kind of have dedicated for playing time. Other guys that are on transfer years, other guys, you know, four players that are on transfer or redshirt years has kind of what he laid out as the design or the model for his program, right? So you got, he may not play nine guys, but you got nine guys you're kind of willing to play. Am I saying that right? It's the kind of the way he's talked about this.
Correct.
You always got four players that know, hey, I'm a practice player. It's my transfer year. This is my redshirt. They're not expecting minutes, so their attitudes around the locker room and the team are positioned with the right expectations. If you stick with that, you're going to have some really disappointed inbound freshmen, or you got some other players leaving, because if that's what he was trying to get to, I don't know how you get to nine. If those two players come back, Jones and Joe, how do you get to that kind of that nine if that's really the way he wants to run his program, guys?
And see, that's why I'm under the impression that regardless of what Mason and Isaiah decide moving forward, the one slot that is currently out open with Jalen Harris transferring is not going, I think it's not going to be a grad transfer, it'd be a transfer. Because if you had a grad transfer, to me, eligibility, and it's another guy whose mouth you have to feed. So that's what would make me think that he would get a transfer that would have to sit and then play, right?
Right.
Okay.
Not necessarily a grad transfer that was immediately eligible.
Yeah.
And then you also got to look at the incoming class who might be redshirting. That's hard to think about with this group, but reality, right?
I would be surprised if they had a transfer, a redshirt this freshman class.
But I'd also, would you be more surprised by that or the fact that he's going to have 12 or 13 guys that think they could go in the game at any time?
The only redshirt scenario I could see if Mason and Isaiah come back. Because
that's what I'm saying. Under this scenario, that's my whole crux to this conversation, is if those two come back making his formula that he's shared with us, it just becomes that much more difficult. And it's a good situation to be in that I got more talented players than I got minutes for. I mean, that's where you ultimately, every players, coach wants to be there, right?
The players don't necessarily think like that. So that's
I know, but as a coach, we're thinking at it from the coaching standpoint. That's always the goal. I got more talent and more players than I got minutes. And that creates the pressure in practice to perform.
Mm-hmm. And
hey, maybe that nine players that are actually going to get in, that ain't set in stone throughout the year. That could change as the year goes on. You brought up Ethan Henderson earlier in the segment or last segment. You know, here's a guy that he wasn't getting a lot of minutes at the beginning of the year, but he was getting a hell of a lot more minutes at the end of the year, even starts.
Picked it up. Yeah.
So that it can all change in the course of a season.
And again, your basketball team finished 20-12, 7-11 in conference. In the 18 home games, you went 14-4, and yet you had over 290,000 fans show up, which was 8th nationally, 3rd in the SEC, an average of over 15 show up, which is 12th nationally. This is the floor for basketball attendance, I think, in Eric Musselman's tenure. You had 5 sellouts with a below-average team. You helped sell out 5 home games with a below-average team. And now you have a top-7 recruiting class coming in. You still are, obviously, Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe's decisions are still up there, but you have the potential to have 2 surefire NBA guys come back next season with the addition of what you added. And You got three guys that have been sitting on the bench getting better all season long with getting their red shirt. They're going to be added as well. So like you said, Tommy, there's a lot of talent available next year, especially if Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe elect to come back to the University of Arkansas.
Back to those numbers, 290,000, eighth in attendance. How much of that was helped by football? And what I mean is back-to-back 2-10 years, very disappointing, low attendance in football, people frustrated, people looking for a winner. I mean, we saw a lot of those. And then I think the schedule helped, too. You had some great games on the schedule. Clearly, the product lived up to, I think, a lot of people's expectations. And even though you were just a bubble team, I think for a good stretch of the season, it exceeded people's expectations. But if you'd had a football team that had won 8 games versus 2 games, I'm wondering if those numbers would be as high.
I think I've talked to Phil about this, and I've asked him. I was like, do you think baseball players feel more pressure when the basketball team and the football team suck? And Arkansas fans are just like, their thirst has yet been quenched for winning. I asked them, I was like, these players are in school. They're talking to their classmates, whether they're football players, basketball players, or normal students. They're talking to parents. They're talking to fans. They know that there's pressure on them because of how the other two teams perform. I think that Arkansas basketball is such an enigma in the SEC. Like, it's similar to Kentucky, where there's such a large contingency of Razorback basketball fans that regardless of how the football team does, I don't know if that's affected as much.
But we've seen, when Pelfrey was here, when Anderson was here, we saw, even under Mike Anderson, we saw a lot of years, a lot of games where there was, they had 14,000 tickets sold, 13,000 tickets sold, but there was 7,000 or 8,000 in the arena. When football does better, I think it always hurts basketball.
Well, on that point, I'll go off that. What happens is you never have good football and basketball years.
Never at the same time, do you?
Ever.
No, you're right.
Ever. So I'll agree with you in that point.
I just think we all desire a winner. And there's always new energy around a program when there's a new coach. There's going to be more energy and excitement for football, even though you've won 4 games in 2 years, because Sam Pittman and his staff are new, and it's exciting. It's a clean slate. There was a clean slate with basketball. People were, particularly after you've had a coach that's been here a decade, more or less, with Mike Anderson, you'd heard all the sermons. You'd seen all you wanted to see. Now there's something new to watch. So I think to some degree, the clean slate in basketball, coupled with just piss poor performance in football the last couple of years under Chad Morris, just It drew people into basketball.
Okay, let me ask you this. If Arkansas wins 5 games in football, do you think attendance is going to go down in basketball? Or if there's an uptick football?
I think they feel that. I do think the more there's an up, of course, who knows? I don't know what all the parameters are now with what we're going through with this coronavirus and, how we come out of this. I'm telling you, even successful programs like in Alabama may struggle to some degree, some more than others. But I just worry about people's discretionary incomes and discretionary monies. Let's face it, attending a game's a luxury, right? It's not a requirement. There's a difference between need and want. We all want to go to the games. We don't need to go to the games. But we may feel like we need, and it's hard to sometimes separate that. But at the end of the day, food on the table for the family is always going to take a precedent. Paying your mortgage should take a precedent over going to the game.
It's more important.
And we're not talking about 80% of the fan. We're talking about that extra 10 or 15% that puts you over the top so you can even have these discussion of numbers. So I worry and wonder about people being able to afford to go to games depending on how long this current crisis in our country extends. The longer it goes, the more things like college sports and pro sports become at risk for attendance. So I don't know. If Arkansas won 5 games in football, would it hurt basketball? I think Eric Musselman has built enough excitement around basketball at this point. He's created its own fan base. He's created enough people that are energized and excited about this program that I think we got a chance for the first time in a long time to see a successful football and basketball program at the same time. And I think what Eric Musselman's done is created his own separate fan base to a degree.
So didn't you just defeat your own argument?
I'm just talking about the realities of of what we have seen historically at Arkansas. You're correct that in your lifetime, we've never seen both successful at correct. The same time. The closest is in early 40 years ago in my early lifetime when Lou Holtz had football rolling in the late 70s and Eddie Sutton was taking the basketball program to Final Fours.
And Norm taking the team to the College World Series final.
You know, that's as close as... That may be the golden era for all three sports at the same time. Of course, no one really paid a lot of attention to baseball back then. You didn't even have lights on the old George Cole Field that now has a parking deck sitting on top of it. You know, so it's just a different era. I'm just saying.
Where is that, by the way? You said the parking deck. Where did they used to have?
Next to the indoor football. There's the parking garage.
Oh,
that's where George Cole Field in front of Hyper.
By the Hyper. Okay.
Yeah, that's where the baseball park was when I was a kid.
Interesting.
Before they moved down that. Yeah, I mean, in your age group, you don't know anything other than Baum Stadium.
Nope.
Baum Stadium was, when they built that thing, not to get sidetracked, it was kind of, I don't say out in the boonies, but it was, the campus didn't extend down that far. That was kind of a, why are they building it that far off campus kind of conversation. Obviously, they built it there, and it's kind of like when you build a Walmart in the middle of nowhere, everything else builds up around you. It's a very smart move by Frank Broyles back then. So, easy access. They got the exit there at exit
right
60.
Right next to the highway.
It's just,
yeah.
It's just a genius move.
Whatever.
Genius move, as most of his decisions were. So, my point is, you don't have unlimited money. I don't have unlimited money. The fans and the people listening don't have unlimited money. The ability to go to both isn't always there. That's my point. I'm not making an argument. My point is there enough people to create two fan bases? And what I mean by that is enough people to fill Bud Walton Arena up 15,000 plus and get, if football gets going again, fill that up, because I don't know how many fans right now, particularly in the current state of things, can go to both.
So you mentioned the money aspect, which obviously with everything going on right now, people losing their jobs, people kind of quenching their wallets a little bit.
Uncertain times.
I get that. So, on that note, you think about the decline in football attendance, and it's been other sports as well that's been more rapid in football attendance. If Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe announce that they're coming back, and you're an Arkansas fan deciding on whether you want to go to a football game or basketball team, and the money allotted, you only have to pick one, you have to pick basketball. And I don't care if you're a bigger football fan, you need to pick basketball. And it's not even close. If Mason Jones and Isaiah Joe come back, these freshmen are as good as advertised, and then the addition of Connor Vanover, Iola, and Note, there is no question in my mind. This is not a diss to Sam Pittman and what he's doing, because you know he's worked his tail off and the rest of his staff. But let's just be honest. Who's going to have a better year? Which are you going to have more fun watching? The games in Bud Walton Arena, or a team that is on the bitter edge of potentially making a bowl game? It's not even a comparison at all.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a premium light lager brewed with real lemonade.
Oh, he does a tightrope act. Boy, Houdini's in the house. We're number three, and nobody's home to watch that house. Touchdown, Hogs! Holy Hog!
Let's get into this conversation about Darren McFadden, and I want to start with this highlight that I posted yesterday. And it blows my mind that Steve Spurrier, in 2007, when Darren McFadden rushed for 321, did not have DMAC on his Heisman ballot. Let me refresh you. After 321 yards that Darren McFadden put up against the Gamecocks, in which Steve Spurrier was the head coach on the opposing sidelines, he did not include him on his Heisman ballot. Man.
That was by intent.
Oh yeah. He was spiteful for sure.
The give is once some more. McFadden.
See ya.
DMAC.
Hold on.
DMAC not looking back. Touchdown.
How about that Heisman, Mark Jones?
How do you like
that? Wide open again. Did that take how long?
It was an 80-yard run. I'll guess about 8 seconds.
Wow.
Somebody get him a plane ticket for New York City and the Downtown Athletic Club. A career-high run for Darren McFadden, Bob. 80 yards.
You heard Mark Jones talk about the Downtown Athletic Club where the Heisman Trophy presentation is. Well, he was invited, Tommy. back-to-back years. Mm-hmm. First time in 60-plus years that a player finished back-to-back runner-up in the Heisman Trophy presentation. Which stings more, the 2006 loss or the 2007? Is there one? And they both hurt to me. But is there one that stands out to you of the two that you're just like, man, there's no way he should have lost this year? None.
Probably 06 because of the season you'd had, the way you had played. And I'd say the first one.
2006, you lose to Troy Smith. This, at the time, the second biggest differential in Heisman Trophy history. And I think that's, or I think it was first actually, and it is now with Joe Burrow winning this past year, it's moved to second.
So, and at the time, this is how we're always going to feel here at home. If that had been a player that had not been from a place like Ohio State.
Oh, it's the helmet 100%.
It's the name on the front of the jersey more than the back. I mean, they just weren't going to vote for someone from Arkansas.
So here's the thing. I love that you bring that up. And again, I thought Connor and Chris, and you can listen to the podcast. It's the Saturday Down South podcast if you really want to dive into this, because they gave so many good points. Troy Smith had 4 college game days. 8 of his 12 games were nationally televised on ABC. And you think about the SEC network, how great it's been for Arkansas and the SEC, how many more games are televised. Oh, let's see. So Arkansas, so that year, Tommy, Arkansas, and the last, I'm trying to find the stat that I have listed, but there were games that Darren wasn't even on TV.
Yeah.
Like, not even on TV because of just, you think about the JP, the Jefferson Pilot game, and then the CBS, and that was it. That was basically it, unless you got an ESPN slot.
Yep.
And you mentioned
Arkansas.
That's
not like it was today.
You mentioned Arkansas not getting those ESPN slots. I mean, they're not going to put that. So in 2006, 3 of his last 6 games were not on TV. In 2007, 5 of his last 8 games were not on TV. Think about that. We always made the joke with Christian McCaffrey how Pac-12 After Dark ruined his Heisman Trophy campaign, that he probably should have won it. The same can be said about Darren McFadden, and that's just one facet. That's just one chain of the argument. He wasn't on TV for the public to watch. Yes, the Southeastern Conference fans knew who Darren McFadden was. But you have Tony Kornheiser on Pardon the Interruption get on, Tommy, and say he doesn't even know who Darren McFadden is. And part of that was the television contract at the time. The fact that, again, Darren McFadden in 2006, 3 of his last 6 games were not on TV, and 5 of his last 8 are in 2007, while Troy Smith gets 4 college game days and 8 of the 12 are nationally televised on ABC. Does that seem fair? Does that seem fair at all?
Well, but as you pointed out, back then there wasn't the SEC network. There wasn't the ability for every league to have every game for every school televised. And a lot of those decisions, other than CBS, which was more of a kind of a 2-week out thing, a lot of those decisions were made months in advance, particularly for 06. That wasn't a season that we saw coming. 07 was more, hey, we're going to put Arkansas on TV more. But you didn't see all of that coming. And that's why I like the flexibility of TV today versus back then. You didn't always end up with the best games or the best teams or the best players on TV in the best spots.
Yep.
Just what the flexibility back then.
So in Ohio State, the 2006 year in November, Tommy, they played teams with a combined 25-47 record. Now, the Michigan game at the end, where it was dubbed the game of the century, even though we know the real game of the century was 1969, 1-2 against Texas. Ohio State, Michigan was also 1-2. Michigan was so overrated that year. They had one big time win against Notre Dame against Brady Quinn's squad. But outside of that, they didn't do anything. And I know that Lloyd Carr was a really good head coach. Jim Tressel was a really good head coach. But that was like what Troy Smith did against Michigan was like, oh, he's won it now because of how he played in that game. He goes for 300-plus. Tommy, you know how many 300-plus yard games he had that year as a passer? Troy Smith.
Oh, Troy Smith. Two?
One.
One, okay.
And it was Michigan. That's it. Now, I'll give him credit. Michigan was a decent defensive team. That's a huge rivalry game. We know the magnitude of Ohio State and Michigan. But half of his games, Tommy, He threw for less than 200 yards. That's your Heisman Trophy winner.
You know, another thing we talked about back then in that moment when this was unfolding, and I don't know how much you remember this, was McFadden hadn't developed everything off the field yet as far as his ability to do a one-on-one interview. His answers in press conferences were very short and limited, you know, very brief when he was asked a question. Troy Smith was perceived not just because he was from Ohio State, but was the better interview.
He was more polished, yeah.
He was more polished. That was part of McFadden's development as just an individual that I don't think his ability in press conference settings, one-on-one interviews with writers, was as smooth. And I think that hurt him too.
And you think about what he was having to deal with. So we mentioned Troy Smith's great game against Michigan. Again, that was his only 300-yard-plus passing game that season. So the final two games that Darren played before the Heisman Trophy presentation were against LSU and against Florida in 2006. Tommy, both teams had top six scoring and total defense, total and yards allowed. So not only does he, and I know he didn't have a great SEC championship, but I mean, they just keyed on him so much. Like Charlie Strong and his defense keyed on McFadden so much in that game. Dude put up 182 yards on 21 carries and two touchdowns against LSU. Pretty sure Casey Dick threw three interceptions. No, okay, it was...
Which year was it he got the high ankle sprain, too? Didn't he have an ankle sprain? Or
that did happen. And then
I can't remember which year.
He hurt his toe in a bar fight. I can't remember what the... Yeah. That was the 2006 or 2007.
I think that was going into 2007.
He was also dealing with something, too. But those two teams ended up in the top four, and all this love.
We're talking about the high ankle sprain. He's the reason they changed the rule in the horse collar. He was one of the prime examples of a play where I'm trying to remember all this, all kind of coming back. Someone remembers it better than me, text in. He was drugged down from behind, and that's how he got the, that's one of the reasons. One of the examples of why they put the horse collar foul in is for plays like I remember when McFadden got that high ankle sprain.
Yeah, and I was watching some of his highlights yesterday getting ready for this, and there were so many times I saw where he had players had to drag him down because that was the only way he could get him down.
Right.
But because of how much he used to move back in the day.
I'm trying to remember the details around that high ankle sprain, but I remember that was another thing he was playing through as well.
So continuing on with Troy Smith. So Troy Smith, they get to a national championship. Ohio State is favored in that one. Florida just destroys them. Mm-hmm. Absolutely murders them. Urban Meyer has a fantastic game plan, and they run all over. Troy Smith in that national championship goes 4 for 14 for 35 passing yards. Gets sacked five times. This was a guy that was dubbed as the Heisman Trophy, the best player in college football. And here's the thing. I get the aspect of, at that point, no player in Heisman history had won it as a sophomore. It was just juniors and seniors. I get that. But the following year, you give it to a sophomore. You changed up the criteria in the worst possible time as an Arkansas Razorback fan, where you have the best, probably the best player you've had ever come through your program. Now, you can make the argument for Hampton and some others, but like at least in my lifetime, that's the best player that's ever come through, and you changed up the criteria while he is going through the process of the Heisman Trophy.
The unwritten rule, you know. Mm-hmm. When a rule is an unwritten rule, but... to me, it's harder to argue the Tebow year in 07 than it is to argue the year with
because he had 50 touchdowns. But
right.
Tebow's
statistics and the way his team played, that was a little harder to. That one was easier for me to stomach. But you thought, well, this guy, in hindsight, if you have some reflection. You know, he really kind of got the shaft a year ago against Troy Smith. But they just were not, I mean, there was just really no chance that they were not. Tim Tebow was such a media icon. He played at Florida, where Steve Spurrier had played and coached. And I know this Urban Meyer, you factor all of those elements in. Dude, McFadden stood no chance in the second one.
Well, here's why the Tebow year should be more irritating as an Arkansas fan. Because you were told in 2006 the only way that Darren McFadden didn't win the trophy is because he's a sophomore.
Yeah.
And remember, Tommy, he was on the cover of Sports Illustrated heading that year. He was dubbed as the number one player that was going to be drafted.
Yep.
Like, think about all that. And he lived up to expectations over and over time and time again. I think he was drafted 4 overall by the Oakland Raiders, which, by the way, Andy in Mountain Hope texts in. He says he feels worse that Darren got drafted by the Raiders, which, I mean, probably killed his NFL career, to be honest. But
him and Tyler Wilson both.
Yeah. Unfortunately, for two great Razorbacks, they went to a franchise that loves being in mediocrity since Al Davis left us. But I just think you'd have to be even more aggravated. 2007, I get the Tebow stuff, 50 touchdowns, like, was incredible. And I genuinely like Tim Tebow, but if you're going to tell me repeatedly in 2006 that
you can't win it here because of being a sophomore,
then you're the whole offseason as an Arkansas fan, you're waiting for 2007. Hey, man, our guy's going to win a Heisman Trophy.
Name on the front
guy,
of the shirt.
Our guy is going to have Darren McFadden inscribed on the Heisman Trophy. He's going to get to New York, and it's going to be a spectacular presentation. And remember, Darren's a humble guy. Now, he has his vices. We've talked about those. But Darren, before the Heisman Trophy presentation, according to the Tampa Bay Times, said, I think Troy should win it. He's a great player. He's literally talking about his competitor in the Heisman Trophy presentation, and he is so humble about it. He's like, this is the upperclassman. I think he should win. That's great. He didn't win it. Okay, that's fine. We get through that. He's giving. He's passing. Troy's almost like passing on the torch. It's like, I want it this year. This belongs to him next year. And then you get to 2007, and the trophy is basically ripped away from you. And again, 5 of Darren's last 8 games in 2007 were not televised. 5 of his athlete last 8.
Yep.
On top of, and I know Chris and Connor didn't bring this up, but on top of the fact, in 2006, despite Darren's just killing it, just absolutely destroying on the field, you had the whole Gus Malzahn and Houston Nutt crap, yep, Tommy, that's going on behind the scenes with the Springdale 5, Mitch Mustang, and everything that's tied into that. And yet he's still dominating on the field, and no one can stop him.
Yep.
And additionally to that, here's what also blows my mind. And again, Chris and Connor did a great point arguing this. In 2005, do you remember Reggie Bush's teammate, his running back, his tandem?
Yeah.
Lindale White? Okay. So White, you know how many touchdowns he had that season?
Lindale White or Reggie Bush?
Lindale White.
I have no
clue. 25.
Okay.
How many times do you remember during Darren's campaign that the fact that he was playing alongside Felix Jones, that was counted against him and Peyton Hillis?
And Peyton Hillis, yeah.
I don't remember, and again, I was younger, I don't remember a single discussion back in 2005, the fact that not only did he play alongside Lindale White, who had 25 TDs, tell me who won the Heisman Trophy in 2004? You remember?
Reggie Bush, wasn't it?
Matt Leinart,
okay.
So his teammate.
Which year was Bush?
2005.
Five, okay.
So in 2004, you have
back-to-back years.
So. Yeah, back-to-back USC guys. You have Matt Leinart wins the Heisman Trophy. And then you have Lindale White, who has 25 touchdowns in 2005. And Reggie Bush is the consensus Heisman Trophy winner, even though some people thought Vince Young should have won it. And we know what Vince Young did in that national championship. But there was no discussion the fact that, oh, Reggie's playing along. He's getting the ball from Heisman Trophy winner. He's playing alongside a guy that has 25 touchdowns, not to mention they had some of the best wide receivers and the best defense, one of the best defenses in college football. There's no discussion the fact that, oh, we can't give it to Reggie because of all this talent surrounding him.
So let me ask this question, because I don't think anyone's ever asked this before. It just kind of came to me as you're going through these points. Did Darren McFadden lose the 07 Heisman when Reggie Fish dropped the punt? And listen to me on this. If Arkansas beats Florida and Arkansas wins the SEC title and they elevate themselves as a national program, who knows where possibly your postseason would have went from there. What if Arkansas as a program, McFadden as an individual, Houston Nutt as a head coach, on and on and on, had the cachet, had the national presence to close the deal the following year for the Heisman Trophy? Was the Heisman Trophy fumbled as much as the football in the SEC championship game in 06 that cost McFadden that margin he needed in 07?
I think
I've never thought of that till just now. But part of what we're talking about here is the fact that you're going up against Ohio State. You're bringing up USC in back-to-back years in 04 and 05. those are names of programs that have great national presence, great media awareness, hard to deny. They must be a better player because they're at Ohio State, they're at Florida, they're at USC. Would Arkansas have elevated itself as a program if only Arkansas hadn't fumbled away the 06 SEC championship game? If you're an SEC champion, I just think that makes it more difficult to not vote for Darren McFadden.
And here's the other point to that, and I'll add to it. He didn't play Tebow in 2007, and he only played Tebow as a backup who came in for spots against Chris Leak. But you have that going into 2007 season when you're competing against Tebow. Well, the last time they played, who won? Well, Darren did.
Yeah.
And I know that maybe that's not the whole argument or anything, but the head-to-head competition I would hope would play a factor into that and saying, hey, well, what happened last time these two guys met on the field? Well, they met in the SEC championship and the Arkansas Razorbacks won. And Darren had, I think he had 73 yards in that game, but he probably would have had more if they had been ahead and he got the ball more and stuff and they weren't forced to throw. And on top of that, Tommy, we talked about Reggie Bush, the talent surrounding him, the cast surrounding him. You could say the same thing at Florida with Tebow and everything he had, because I mean the team was loaded. I mean, you had Aaron Hernandez, you had Humphrey, I mean, you and Murphy, I mean, you had Harvin, you had studs all over the field on that football team. And Darren, yes, he had Felix, yes, he had Payton, yes, he had a great offensive line, Luigs, and a bunch of those other boys. But who was your quarterbacks at the time? What was their completion percentage? How bad were those quarterbacks at the time that Darren McFadden was at Arkansas? You had no one. Had Casey Dick.
Casey Dick, Mitch Mustain. I mean, that's where you were. 06 was more or less Mustain.
Yeah, that's where you were at. And to give an example, to put that in perspective, in the losses that Arkansas had in 2007, you know how many passing yards they had in those games?
In fact,
just take a guess.
How many of the passing yards were McFadden's? You know,
he would throw a couple touchdowns. Yeah. At one point, he was 6 for 6. I think that was in 2007. I remember Vern's distinct, oh, he's 6 for 6 on the season.
And another reason why McFadden should have won it is he changed football.
The Wild Hog.
You know, the Wildcat. Sure, grateful Danny thought that up. Danny Nutt thought of that.
In those,
he individually changed the landscape of football. And how many, you know, junior high programs on up to the pros have copied that since and are still using it today. And you can say, well, it had been used 40 years ago. They'd used it, you know, back in the 60s. That's fine. But it wasn't being used in college football till Arkansas did it, until Darren McFadden did it. It wasn't being used until then in today's time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another reason why McFadden deserved it, is because he changed the way football was played in a good aspect.
In those losses in 2007, you averaged 11 completions and 148 passing yards. Let me go over that again. In the losses that you suffered in 2007, 148 passing yards and 11 completions. That's what you averaged. That's the help that Darren and Felix got competing against the Pisa. And then as we close down the shop, you're not only having to deal in 2006 with the Gus Malzahn and Houston Nutt back and forth, the bickering behind the scenes, in practice, whatever. In 2007, the entire year, everyone thinks that Houston's going to get fired. You had a plane drive over, fire Houston Nutt.
Yep, pulling a banner.
And yet, he still did what he did.
You're listening to the Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush Podcast. Try the new Bud Light Lemonade, a light and flavorful beer for those easy drinking occasions.
The crowd's into it. They just threw him out of the game. They just threw him out of the game. He's gotten his second technical, and he's been thrown out of the ball game.
Again, CJ's Butcher Boy Burgers, proud to have them as a sponsor on the Morning Rush. And again, eat local. Especially in these times, you always want to do that. And Keith Wilson and his family do a fantastic job.
Need about a gallon of that fry sauce right now.
Their fry sauce is absolutely incredible.
Man.
It's new and it is incredible. Let's go to the phones. Jake Weingarten joins us, owner of StockRisers.com. Jake, good morning. Thanks for making some time for us, man.
Of course. Good morning. How you guys doing?
Good, man. So I was texting with you earlier this week. I know that a lot of different players have been linked to the Arkansas basketball program, and I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on what Arkansas has in Eric Musselman. You told me, like, I think he's a player's coach. He's very knowledgeable when it comes to X's and O's, but obviously recruiting is major nowadays, and he's been highly successful with that. What does Arkansas have currently with Eric Musselman as a recruiter, Jake?
I mean, obviously he's built some sort of chemistry with the recruits that he's brought on campus. One thing, you know, that I noticed with him, and it's going to sound very cheesy and very corny, is the pictures that he takes with the recruits on visits. You know, the reenactments of those popular NBA or college plays. I noticed that, and I've seen something like that, and, you know, Eric Musselman all over social media, and, you know, stuff like that is very intriguing to recruitments. You know, he's brought in Moses Moody, who's a four-star guy, Devontae Davis. You know, they got Duncan Powell in the 2021 class. You know, he's done such an excellent job in just a short amount of time being at Arkansas, and he's got a platform in the conference he's in, and he's using it the right way.
Talking with Jake Weingarten here, owner of StockRogers.com. Jake, when you look at Arkansas, I keep seeing your tweets how Arkansas has reached out. There's interest in Arkansas with these different grad transfers, high school kids, transfers. Is Arkansas more highly active than other schools, or is this just kind of how it is today in today's age?
You know, as far as the transfer portal, I think, you know, their name has popped up more than others, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. You know, there's some grad transfers out there on the market that, you know, are extremely talented. You know, Jordan Bruner is one from Yale, and I talked to him about a day or two ago, and, you know, he said Arkansas is very high on his list. Just 2-3 days, you know, of really being into the portal, he said Coach Musselman and the staff have been extremely hard on him. But, you know, as far as, you know, where their interest is, yeah, their name pops up a lot. It's not really a bad thing. You know, some of these guys, you know, tell these schools no. After a coach reaches out, after them being in the portal, they'll say, you know, man, I don't think I fit here. You know, don't even waste your time recruiting. So I think that's kind of why you see their name pop up more. You know, why not try? But I think as far as Coach Musselman, I think he'll only reach out to guys he believes he has a chance in. As far as the transfers I've talked to, Musselman's only reached out to a handful, and Arkansas remains involved with them. So that obviously means something. And there's a difference as to, you know, just an assistant reaches out and, you know, sees if there's interest.
Jake, you bring up the assistants. I wanted to ask you about his staff, Chris Crutchfield, Clay Mosier, Corey Williams. You know, in basketball recruiting, a lot more than, say, football recruiting, where you focus on coordinators and other coaches a lot of time in the recruiting process. How much do you hear about those three guys? And where is Arkansas at in their ability compared to other staffs with the three top assistants he has? Tell us about those guys and your evaluation of their recruiting abilities.
Oh, they've done an excellent job. And like I said, when I was talking about Coach Musselman before, they've already brought in so much talent in a short amount of time. And they've already got a head start with 2021 with Duncan committed there. So, I mean, as far as the three assistants, you know, I've heard great things. And one thing that I mentioned before is, you know, all these guys have a platform now that they're in such a major conference and they're really using it to their advantage. You know, you saw that viral video of Coach Musselman having a practice by himself the other day, and, you know, the assistants joined in on that. But as far as recruiting and, you know, knowledge of the game, I mean, it's definitely there. And the assistants have done a great job recruiting, especially with Moses Moody. Every member of that staff was involved with that recruitment. And, you know, I talked to Moody last month, you know, just to reassure that, you know, he was signing with Arkansas and he was still going to play there. And he said, of course, I definitely am. And, you know, throughout that recruitment, especially the one with Moody, you know, he said every staff member was involved and, you know, they all really pushed to get him there. And I think something like that, you know, so early in the Arkansas tenure, you know, that's important.
You bring up the videos and the social media presence. We pay attention a lot to it, obviously, because we cover Arkansas basketball. How much of this do you see going on? How unique is it, I guess, is the better way to phrase the question. How unique is what Eric Musselman is doing with his approach on social media when you compare it to other coaches around the country? We don't see as much of it. Maybe it's because we're not paying as much of attention. You have a broader perspective, see a lot more things. How unique is what Arkansas is doing compared to other schools in the country?
Oh, you're definitely right. I mean, it's definitely a unique thing. I mean, the first time I saw it when he got the job, you know, I saw a video of him opening the gate to the football stadium by himself. And like I said, the visit pictures, you know, stuff like that is so interesting. And, you know, it really brings a platform, you know, of more fans in. It brings more fans. It's very intriguing. I'll be quite honest with you. Before Musselman, I mean, I was I obviously knew about Arkansas basketball, you know, covering national recruiting and stuff like that. But, you know, once Musselman came in, you know, I definitely became more intrigued because, you know, he had a vision and it seems like he's trying to build a culture there that, you know, is very unusual. And I say that in a good way. But, you know, the way that he's using his platform, it's the right thing to do. I mean, at Nevada, you know, he obviously was a great coach and he's still a great coach. And, you know, he had some great teams there. But now that he's in such a major conference, he's using his platform to his advantage. And it's smart and it's very unique.
We're speaking with Jake Weingarten here on The Morning Rush, owner of StockRisers.com. Jake, when you have talked to some of these grad transfers mm-hmm. and high school kids about Arkansas, what have they said?
You know, the latest is Ian DuBose. He's a Houston Baptist grad transfer. He's probably one of the best scorers on the market, if not the best one. You know, a lot of them talk about fit, and, you know, with these grad transfers, like I said, they've got 1 year of eligibility left, so, you know, this recruiting process is extremely serious to them. And some of them never even went through this process before, so what they're saying about Arkansas, you know, is the fit, and, you know, being able to play in a tough conference like the SEC, it's a very important thing for them. And, you know, Arkansas is an intriguing place to be, new coaching staff, you know, nice facilities, big basketball fan base. It's an intriguing option, and then you get to compete in one of the best basketball conferences in the country.
So one of the guys that you haven't mentioned that I haven't seen any links to Arkansas is Alex O'Connell, who's out of Duke, who transferred. Mm-hmm. Did you see him being a good fit as a Razorback?
There is no interest I've heard of just yet. I think he'd fit great there, I mean, as far as being in Coach Musselman's system. But there's two schools that I've heard linked with him most is Memphis and Georgetown. Memphis is the only school I've been told has offered as of now. But, you know, not a lot has been spoken of since the interest. I know Georgia and Tom Crean, you know, keeping him at home was something that they were going to look into. When talking with people at Georgia, you know, and talking with people in O'Connell's camp, you know, Georgia, Memphis, Dayton, Georgetown were among the early schools that reached out. But Memphis is the only reported offer. I know Mike Miller and Penny Hardaway are the two that, you know, are heavily pursuing him. I do think Memphis could eventually be his landing spot. But, I mean, as far as fit, I think Arkansas would be an excellent fit. I mean, you see the scores that they have in their system, Mason Jones, you know, those guys. I think O'Connell would be able to fit perfectly in that system.
Jake, what's your opinion or your evaluation of Arkansas high school basketball and the talent in this state when you're talking about you know, recruiting high school players in the state? And how does it compare to some of the other states like a Mississippi or an Alabama or a Tennessee? Where is Arkansas amongst the SEC states in the footprint, in your opinion, as far as talent in state for basketball recruiting?
Oh, I mean, recently they've definitely built something special out there. You know, Devontae Davis, I was actually, you know, roaming on my phone and, you know, going on the Sports Center app, and, you know, they have their own little Sports Center thing on the phone for, you know, phone people using the phone rather than TV. And, you know, Devontae Davis had his own feature, and, you know, I'm looking into Devontae Davis, and, you know, I covered him in high school, you know, before he was committed to Arkansas, and, you know, a guy like that, you know, posting up triple doubles and, you know, just doing unique things on the court, it definitely set something special in that state. And I think as far as talent, you know, there's states like Texas and, you know, states like that that, you know, weren't really spoken about. And I think Arkansas is more of an up-and-coming state. And as far as having a college like the Razorbacks in town, that makes it even more important. And, you know, I think Coach Musselman will put emphasis on landing in-state talent. And he's already done that. And I know that there's more offers out there for in-state talent. And, I mean, as far as Arkansas, definitely a state on the rise.
Speaking with Jake Weingarten here, owner of StockRisers.com. Jake, who do you think is the most coveted transfer in the market right now?
Well, I think one of the most coveted, well, the two most coveted are off the board in Seth Towns and Patrick Teague. Seth Towns committed to Ohio State a few nights ago on SportsCenter, and then Patrick Tate committed to Duke yesterday. Right now, I'd say Jordan Bruner is probably the most coveted one on the transfer market, and that's actually good for Arkansas because he did list the Razorbacks as one of four programs that are on him extremely hard right now, along with, you know, Baylor and Texas Tech and schools like that. Bruner is 6'10". He went to Yale for 3 years, you know, put up 15 points, 10 rebounds. He's 6'10". He has an NBA build. But with him, you know, he was actually declared for the NBA draft, and he still technically is. But, you know, with everything going on, he said that there's probably a better chance he'll go to college because now there's no NBA combine. There's no pro days for, you know, the NBA agencies. They host their own little pro days for clients for the NBA scouts. So all those opportunities, you know, to boost your stock and prove yourself, it's all gone. So Bruner said, you know, he still has the NBA on his radar, you know, trying to see what they do with all their combine stuff and when the draft will be and, you know, what the new deadlines and rules are. So he said right now his focus is on college, but the NBA is definitely still an intriguing option for him.
Jake, you mentioned Mike Miller and Penny Hardaway. Penny Hardaway is regarded as one of the newest and best recruiters in college basketball. He is Memphis. I mean, you could build a college basketball team within the area code of the 901. And I know that Eric Musselman and Penny have a relationship. Penny was joking with him. It's like, we can't let Musk get across the bridge to get into Memphis. But with Arkansas dealing with that, I don't know. I know you probably don't know the backstory with Arkansas basketball as much, but like, they have got a lot of great kids out of the Memphis area. Do you think moving forward, that's going to be a thorn in Eric Musselman's side, the fact that Penny Hardaway is in Memphis and is as visible as he is?
Oh, I mean, for sure. You've seen what Penny's done with that area already. You know, Kennedy Chandler and Musa Cisse, two of the best players in the country, regardless of their class. I mean, Memphis is vying to get them. I mean, they're trying so hard to get them, especially Cisse. But Cisse might reclassify down to 2020. But I'm hearing, you know, LSU and Memphis and Florida State are the ones to look at. But Memphis, man, I mean, they are going to put a big emphasis on keeping players in the state. And like I just said moments ago about Musselman keeping guys in state in Arkansas, I think Penny is trying to do the same thing in Memphis because there's such a large amount of talent. And like, Memphis has always been great with NCAA. Like I said, with Arkansas, it's just going to keep growing and it's on the rise. So like you said, I mean, that will be an issue for Musselman. But, I mean, it's not going to be an issue when you have great talent coming out of Arkansas that you can land at the same time.
Jake, let me top off the interview with this man. Are you a sophomore or freshman at Louisville right now?
Well, my freshman year is still going on, but I'm about to be a sophomore.
Okay, yeah. I'm sorry that's kind of ended shortly. So I got to ask, man, with 24/7, with Rivals, and those are kind of the big gurus when it comes to recruiting, how have you been able to build stock risers, especially such a young guy, when you're going against like such giants like 24/7 and Rivals?
Well, two things. I think the big thing was, you know, realizing in middle school that I wasn't going to have an NBA career. every kid my age at that time, you know, was kind of like, man, I'm going to be in the NBA, professional sports. And, you know, the good thing with me is I was able to realize at a young age, you know, that that's not really going to happen and the chances are very slim. So, you know, I pursued something else. And, you know, sports writing is in my family and reporting, it's in my family. And, you know, I actually discovered that I wanted to get into all this when I was a freshman in high school, when I was at a college game at MSG and there were some recruits in attendance. And I just saw all, you know, the hype around them. There were at least 20 reporters around a kid that's my age that was standing there 14 years old. And it was like, man, you know, I want to get involved in something like this. And as far as how I built stock risers, you know, I built it off relationships. It's definitely not a money thing for me. It's more of, you know, something I love to do. I love waking up and writing up articles and talking to recruits and talking to college coaches, and they'll check up on me, you know, stuff like that. I just built great relationships. And a lot of things that people don't understand with me is, you know, it's tons of hate out there for being young, but I mean, I love it. And being my age and the recruits being my age, I think it gives me, you know, a special chance, you know, to speak with them more and connect with them more, especially because I'm in their age area. And, you know, some of these guys will call me and not even speak about recruiting. So I think that's why, you know, Stock Risers has turned into what it is, you know, based off relationships and the connections I've been able to build with recruits.
He is Jake Weingarten, owner of StockRisers.com. Really good recruiting website if you're interested in high school basketball, grad transfers, or transfers. Jake, thanks for making some time out for us this morning. I'm sorry your freshman year ended early. Hopefully you'll have a full sophomore year and everything else moving forward, man.
course. I appreciate you guys. Thank you.
Absolutely. Good stuff from Jake Weingarten. We will get that on our Bud Light Seltzer Morning Rush podcast coming up.
Hey, we're brought to you by Crabtree RV and Alma, exit 13 off of I-40 next door to the Cracker Barrel. They've been in business for 70 years at Crabtree RV. Great parts and service department, first class there, first class service all around, including their 26,000 square foot indoor showroom. So there's plenty of space for you to go and shop around and do it in the comfort of their indoor showroom. Get the jump on spring camping. There's no better way to get some isolation right now, to get away from it all, than a great travel trailer, fifth wheel, or motor coach from Crabtree RV in Alma. Again, exit 13 off of I-40. It's Crabtree RV, where your family's dreams come true.
877-377-6963 is the number to call or text in if you want to react to Jake's interview. Sterling, I know you called a while back, so feel free to call back in. Tommy, it was very interesting. So he's a young guy. 18 years
very
old.
I didn't know that till the end of the interview. You hadn't shared that with me.
Isn't that wild?
Freshman, and I'm impressed with him. I'm impressed. He realized at an early age he wasn't going to the NBA. I got to figure out how to take that home and make my 10-year-old son realize he's not going to be a professional gamer and the next ninja on
MLG.
YouTube. Yeah, exactly. So, or maybe he is going to be. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So we've talked before. He's a very knowledgeable guy, and the fact that he's doing all this as a freshman in college at Louisville is pretty spectacular.
Yeah.
And the first thing he brought up on this interview, Tommy, was what? The photos that Eric Musselman takes with these kids.
Yep.
Now, I'm 25. I'm 7 years older than he is. But as a younger guy, as a person in the millennial generation, I can relate to that. And that's why I think that Muss has this uncanny ability that not only does he have this luscious NBA background, so they say, I've coached this player, I got this connection, blah, 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 blah. He can also be a little dorky, and he can also relate to these younger people, me, Jake, and all these different recruits that he's trying to get in with the different. And again,
you're not as young as you used to be.
Yeah, that's a good point.
You're out of their demo now.
Let's not go that far. No one in college basketball has done what he did. That idea is so mind-blowing, the fact that no one had come up with that to this point. And I don't know if Musk came up with that. I don't know if Ruda, Ackerman, Little Muss,
I thought he, you talk about the players, the pictures with the recruits.
Correct.
And they're recreating a iconic scene, if you will. Didn't he share that? Maybe I'm just misremembering, to borrow Roger Clemens here. I thought a recruit had suggested that, and they just ran with it. That a recruit wanted to do it for themselves while they're there, and they just kind of ran with it.
Oh, it's worked.
I don't know, it's working, whatever it is. And now no one else can really steal it without stealing it.
Yeah, because it is
yours.
You've got
the copyright on it.
Yeah, it is the most polarizing thing right now in college basketball in terms of college basketball recruiting.
Your number one source of local news and information you need.
Bud Light Seltzer, 5% ABV and only 100 calories. We'd put it up against any other seltzer out there.